Margantia te mukhapadmani dais. Shanda suparnaya rishayo vivikte. Yasya gamarsho dasarid vayaya. Padam padam tirtha pada prapannaha. Margantiyate.
Feet of the Lord are by themselves the shelter of all places of pilgrimage. The great clear-minded sages, carried by the wings of the Vedas, always search after the nest of your lotus-like face. Some of them surrender to your lotus feet at every step by taking shelter of the best of the rivers, the Ganga, which can deliver one from all sinful reactions. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Paramhamsas are compared to royal swans who make their nests on the petals of the lotus flower. The Lord's transcendental bodily parts are always compared to the lotus flower because in the material world, the lotus flower is the last word in beauty. The most beautiful thing in the world is the Vedas, or Bhagavad Gita, because therein knowledge is imparted by the personality of Godhead himself. The Paramhamsa makes his nest in the lotus-like face of the Lord and always seeks shelter at his lotus feet, which are reached by the wings of Vedic wisdom. Since the Lord is the original cause of all emanations, intelligent persons enlightened by Vedic knowledge seek the shelter of the Lord, just as birds who leave the nest again search out the nest to take complete rest. All Vedic knowledge is meant for understanding the Supreme Lord, as stated by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaishcha sarvar aham eva vedyaha. Intelligent persons who are like swans take shelter of the Lord by all means and do not hover on the mental plane by fruitlessly speculating on different philosophies. The Lord is so kind that He has spread the river Ganges throughout the universe so that by taking bath in that holy river, everyone can get release from the reactions of sins which occur at every step. There are many rivers in the world which are able to evoke one's sense of God consciousness simply by bathing in them, and the river Ganges is chief amongst them. In India there are 5 sacred rivers, but the Ganges is the most sacred. The river Ganges in Bhagavad Gita are chief sources of transcendental happiness for mankind, and intelligent persons can take shelter of them to go back home, back to Godhead. Even Sripad Shankaracharya recommends that a little knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and the drinking of a little quantity of Ganga water can save one from the punishment of Yamaraj. In the beginning of creation, the empowered servants of the Lord, the demigods, are approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeking shelter. The purpose of material existence is to revive the natural propensity of the soul to seek shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. There is no other purpose to be achieved within the entire material universe. The cosmic manifestation has been specifically created by Lord Krishna to frustrate us. If it was simply a miserable place, we would not be so frustrated. But there are enough pleasures, enough forms of happiness, that we become so much attached. There are promises of satisfaction that are always so close, yet so far. Very scientifically it has been designed to frustrate us. When you have something and lose it, you're more frustrated than if you never had it. If you see something that's so wonderful and you long to possess it, but you cannot, or you get so close, but it doesn't happen. How frustrating is that? We give our life with so much of our heart and soul to raise a child, and then it dies. How frustrating is that? We give our life to develop a business and then it fails. How frustrating. We work so hard for so many years to achieve a position, and then we're torn down from it. We spend so much time trying to make this body a nice, healthy, happy place to enjoy. And then so many problems come upon us on the physical and mental level. Material nature was created simply for the purpose of making terrible frustration for the spirit soul who has forgotten Krishna. And actually, the pleasures of this world are only being created to increase the anxiety. But yet, we are mad after these pleasures without understanding the secret hidden purpose behind them. So from the very, very beginning of the creation, the best of all the demigods, Lord Brahma, he was sitting on the lotus flower which had sprouted from the navel of Padmanabh Vishnu. And what was his first condition? He was frustrated. He didn't know who he was. He did not know where he was. He did not know what he was supposed to do. The creation began with frustration. And it will end with frustration. And everything in the middle is filled with frustration. So Brahma was climbing up and down the stem of the lotus flower, trying to find out, where am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Where am I? Who am I? And ultimately, Krishna, from the very, very beginning, he taught him how to solve this problem of misery. He spoke the two words, tapa. You perform tapasya. You meditate on my lotus feet. The example is given here. just as a bird who has left its nest will find no rest until it returns to the nest. So similarly, we have left the nest of the lotus feet of Krishna, wherein the soul naturally abides. And we are looking here, there, and everywhere. But Krishna has given us, through Brahma, the instruction, tapa. You perform the tapasya of meditating on me. So as Lord Brahma meditated on Krishna, he became so purified that Krishna himself personally appeared before him and gave him shelter. And then the procedure of creation continued. This is described so nicely by Maitreya Muni to Vidura. Step by step, how the Lord created the false ego, and from the false ego, all the other material elements are being generated. This is very important to understand. The root of material existence, the very foundation of creation, is the false ego. And the only way to get out of this material existence is to uproot the false ego. The false ego is like the terrible weed. And you can make so many arrangements to alleviate the miseries of this world. It is like cutting the weed. Even if you cut it ground level or even below ground level, again it will grow as long as that root is there. So the root of all material conception is the false ego. And until we uproot that false ego, we have to continue taking birth after birth after birth in this land of frustration. The demigods were then created. The elements are there. And then Krishna, he personally arranged through Lord Brahma that each of the elements and the functions to be performed by the elements and the various mixtures of those elements would have a personal minister who would oversee those affairs. Those are the demigods. Practically every little thing that you see that is happening, there is a demigod in charge of that. I see some of you are unconsciously blinking your eyes. There is a demigod in charge of blinking of eyes. You cannot close your eyes without the help of a demigod. You cannot speak unless a demigod gives you the power to speak. You cannot move. Each of the limbs of your body has various demigods supervising its affairs. This is how Krishna has arranged this universe in a very, very personal way. However, in the very beginning, before the demigods began any of their services, they were bewildered, as their father, Brahma, was. Because they didn't know they were given some idea of what they were supposed to do, but they had no power to do it. They didn't know how to do it. Just like if Sanat Kumar, one of our presidents, told Stoka Krishna Prabhu, today you are in charge of making sure the ocean stays in its place. What would he do? He would be completely bewildered. He would be in anxiety. because it's his duty. But what capacity does he have to perform it? That is the way the demigods felt when they were given these big, big, grand services. So in their anxiety, they all came together to approach Lord Narayan. And they're praying to him that our only purpose ultimately is to take shelter of you. We can do nothing of any tangible value for anyone without your mercy. The very purpose of the creation that they are managing is simply to induce people to seek shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Because the lotus feet of Krishna contain all the shelter of all the places of pilgrimage. Why do we go to a place of pilgrimage? Simply because the atmosphere of that particular place helps us to remember Krishna, helps us to seek shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, there's no meaning to a holy place of pilgrimage. Sometimes people go to holy places to make money, because so many pilgrims come, if I can sell them something very nice, then I can make good profit. Some people go to a holy place of pilgrimage just because it's a quiet place to live. But they do not derive the real benefits. We go to holy places of pilgrimage because the Lord has enacted his wonderful pastimes in these places. And in fact, he is eternally enacting his pastimes in these places. And therefore, great rishis and Vaishnavas have gone to those places since time immemorial to chant the holy names of the Lord, to meditate on the lila of the Lord, to serve the Lord, to give up their bodies in complete absorption of the thought of the Lord. Therefore, the holy places are spiritually surcharged with the mercy of Krishna. And we go there to seek shelter of Krishna exclusively. Srila Prabhupada told us that the temple is meant to be a holy place of pilgrimage. Similarly, the lotus feet of a great devotee is considered to contain all the holy places of pilgrimage. Why? Because such a devotee is always reminding us of Krishna, is teaching us the science of how to take shelter of Krishna. Advaitacharya told Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that your lotus feet contain all the holy places of pilgrimage. And Lord Chaitanya said about his own devotee, Sri Madhavendra Puri, that all the holy tirthas in all of creation are within the dust of the feet of such a great Vaishnava. Because when we serve such a devotee by hearing from them and by executing their orders, we get the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, which is the only shelter, the only real protection in this world of birth and death. So it is a fact that the source of all holiness is the lotus feet of the Lord. And anyone who connects us to those lotus feet are considered our best well-wishing friends. And any place that helps us to remember those lotus feet is considered the holiest of all places. It is explained in this beautiful verse that the clear-minded sages, they are paramhamsas. They are like swans. Prabhupada says royal swans. And the explanation of what a royal swan is contained herein. A royal swan makes his nest on the soft, fragrant petals of a lotus flower. He will not reside anywhere else. He will not eat any other food except the nectar within the stem of a lotus flower. He doesn't look elsewhere. If you come to a royal swan and give him all sorts of nice, nice foods to eat, he will not accept it. The crows, they're all eating so many varieties of insects and worms, and other birds are eating so many other things. But the swan, he will not take anything except that nectar in the stem of the lotus. He will not even consider any other nourishment. And so many birds are building their nests in so many nice trees. But the swan will not consider any other place of residence except the soft, fragrant petals of the lotus flower. Similarly, there is the story of the chataka bird. The chataka bird will only take the raindrop directly from the cloud. There's so much water on the earth, so many big, big lakes, and so many reservoirs of water, wells. These days there are municipal water systems. In every house there's facility of water. How much water is on the earth? But the chatak bird will never look down to consider drinking any of the water of this earth. He's always looking up to the cloud. He'll only take that drop that comes directly from the cloud. And if nothing comes for weeks or months or years, he will suffer. He will starve. And yet, there's so much nice water. There's lakes, there's rivers, there's wells everywhere around. And all the other birds are telling Chatak, come, drink, look, it's nice, it's clear, it's pure, it's filtered. It's good water. But the chatak bird will just keep looking toward the cloud. He does not want any of the nourishment of this world below. He only wants that drop from above. And he will wait and wait and wait, and his eyes will be fixed. Never look down at the temptations below, but always looking up in expectation. And sometimes as he's looking toward that cloud in great eagerness and anticipation and dying of thirst, sometimes instead of water, the cloud sends a thunderbolt to hit the chatak bird right on the head. And then another thunderbolt, and another thunderbolt. And the chatak bird does not say, what am I doing? There's so much water on the earth. Why am I depending so much on this cloud that's only sending me thunderbolts and no water at all? That idea never comes to his mind. He's thinking, let the thunderbolts come. Whenever this cloud by its own sweet will agrees to give me that one drop, I will be most grateful. I will wait. I will never leave my position here. oceans, lakes, rivers, reservoirs, he will not exchange that one drop for all the water in creation. And when that drop comes, then he is fully satisfied. So similarly, the swan, he does not want to live in any place where except the lotus. Similarly, a devotee does not want to live in any place where there is not the lotus feet of Krishna giving shelter. And we do not want to eat anything if it does not bring us closer to Krishna. We do not want to speak anything. We do not want to accept anything from anyone unless it brings us to the lotus feet of Krishna. One who has this mentality is a swan, swan-like Vaishnava. No substitutes. No alternatives. We should kick them out wholesale and seek shelter of Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates with such a devotee. Krishna will test us in so many ways. Those tests are meant to increase our eagerness. If we are sincere, and they will, like a screening device, send us away if we are insincere. We find in the lives of the great personalities how they are not satisfied with anything without Krishna. Maharaj Prataparudra is such an example. He was the king of Orissa. Beautiful palace. Very loving children. A chaste and faithful queen. Power, armies, wealth, opulence. Who could possibly even dream of having what he had in a city like Mumbai? What do you? We're struggling just for some little position, some little bit of comfort and luxury. But as soon as you walk outside, where is it? But Maharaj Prataparudra had all of this. But like the swan, like the chatak bird, Prataparudra Maharaj had his consciousness fixed on getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. One drop of that mercy. Just one interview, one glance. The favor of the Lord is all I want in my life. And when he saw that he was being tested, because he was a king, he was not being given that privilege. Without even considering what he was going to lose, he immediately made a vow with great determination, I will give up my kingdom and I will become a beggar, a mendicant, if that's what it takes to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. I will take off my royal clothes and I will put on rags. I will leave my palace forever and I will sleep on the ground under a tree. I will leave my family, my servants, my ministers, my armies, and I will beg door to door for a little bit of rice. But I must have the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya. The shelter of his lotus feet is the all in all of the purpose of my life. Srila Rupa Goswami has instructed us we should accept whatever is favorable for getting the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And we should reject anything that comes in our way. This is the symptom of a surrendered soul. Anything that is unfavorable toward getting the shelter of the feet of Krishna, which comes through service to Krishna, we should reject it, whoever it is, wherever it is, whatever it is. And similarly, however difficult a thing may be, or however wonderful, if it helps us to seek the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, we should wholeheartedly embrace it. Krishna consciousness is the process of eliminating that which is detrimental to our Krishna consciousness and accepting more and more and more of what is progressive in our Krishna consciousness. This is what sadhana means. Acceptance and elimination. Sometimes giving up what we are attached to is very, very difficult. But it must be done if it is standing between ourselves and God. And similarly, sometimes even a greater difficulty is to accept those things that are favorable. Srila Prabhupada was asked by his Guru Maharaj to take the message of Lord Chaitanya and spread it all over the world. In fact, that order was given to all the disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. But how difficult, how inconceivable to take Lord Chaitanya's message all over the world? It's favorable. What is the most favorable thing in all of creation? To please our Guru and Krishna. Whatever it takes to please them, we should accept it. It may be a little inconvenient. How inconvenient it was for Srila Prabhupada to leave Vrindavan, to come to Bombay. He left Vrindavan to come to Bombay to beg. To beg for a ticket from a Mataji. Sitting on the stairs, I will not leave till I get my ticket. Swamiji, it's too cold. Stay here. And then so many difficulties. Seasick, heart attacks, loneliness, so many terrible, terrible things. People he had to associate with. But it was favorable to pleasing his Guru Maharaj, so he accepted it. To chant our 16 rounds, to follow the four regulative principles, to come to the temple for Srimad Bhagavatam class, to come on Sundays to dance and chant with the devotees. It's not the most severe austerities. But sometimes we don't feel like it. Sometimes we have other ideas of what will give us comfort and enjoyment to perform our service, whatever it may be. If it's pleasing to Krishna, then we should eliminate any obstacles on our path from doing it, and we should accept it. The mind should be fixed with great determination, like the swan. I only have one resting place. That is the nest of the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna has appeared in his name. He's appeared in the beautiful form of his deity. It's appeared in the service that has been given to us. He has appeared in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other great scriptures. He has appeared in the association of devotees. We should always be seeking shelter in these places, because these places are none different than his lotus feet. And how the Lord reciprocates with such devotees, that is the most wonderful of all subject matters. One who seeks shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, Krishna becomes subordinate to that person. Krishna explains this in Srimad Bhagavatam, that why is it that so many people, even the greatest people, are finding refuge and pleasure in my lotus feet? The reason that my lotus feet give the power of unlimited happiness and alleviation of all sins is because I serve my devotees. By serving the Vaishnavas, I am getting the power by which my lotus feet can deliver everyone. This is the way Krishna thinks. He feels himself so subordinate to his devotees. There's that beautiful story of how Krishna, as a little baby, is sitting on a banyan tree leaf and he's sucking on his toe. And Srila Prabhupada explains why he's sucking his own feet with his mouth. Because Krishna sees what kind of ecstasy the devotees are having by taking shelter of his lotus feet. He sees how so many of his associates, they are in such transcendental ecstasy tasting the nectar of his lotus feet. So the Lord himself wanted to taste that sweetness. But as the Lord Narayan, to be putting his feet in his mouth, everyone around has Aishwarya Bhav. They are all worshipping him like this. So it was not suitable in that swarup. So therefore, the Lord took the form of a little infant baby child. Because no one minds if babies put their feet in their mouth. It is quite a normal thing, as far as we know. So in this little baby, he took the baby form just to justify tasting the nectar of his lotus feet, just to see what kind of experience his devotees is having. In fact, Lord Krishna was seeing the love of Srimati Radharani. How Sri Radharani takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. She is the topmost of all devotees who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. In fact, it is only by her grace that anyone can take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. She has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna so fully and wholeheartedly. The power of the love in which she has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, she has purchased. Krishna, the shelter of his lotus feet, has become her property. It's no longer even Krishna's property. He has no power to possess it anymore. He has, by his own ecstatic will, given that shelter to Srimati Radharani for all eternity.
And therefore, if we want the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, we must get the favor of Srimati Radharani. She can give us that shelter. And through the servants of the servants of her servants, the whole world can receive that shelter. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to experience what is the happiness and bliss that Sri Radharani is experiencing by tasting the nectar of the shelter of my love. I want to understand it. I want to experience it. I am considered to be the source of all bliss, but the bliss she experiences by seeing me is something even I cannot understand. What is it about myself that gives her so much happiness? And what is the nature of that love? What is the happiness she has by serving me, by seeing me, by remembering me? Therefore, Krishna took the most munificent form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to taste the ecstasy of Radharani's love. To see what it is that she is experiencing by exclusively finding shelter in serving his lotus feet. And to give that shelter, to give that same experience in a part and parcel form to every living entity who will accept it. Through the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Srinavadvip Dham. Sachi Devi, his mother, how much he was feeling a position of subordination to her love. Because she had wholesale, exclusively sought shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Once when Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu was in Puri, the devotees of Bengal came for the Rath Yatra festival, Chaturmasya, and as every year he would send them back to Bengal. There was always wonderful, intimate relationships between the Lord and his devotees when he would greet them upon coming to Puri, and when he would bid farewell to them when they were returning to their respected services in various parts of Bengal and Orissa. On one occasion, Lord Chaitanya spoke to Srivas Thakur. My dear Srivas, please continue performing this congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. And know that whenever you perform Sankirtan, I will personally be present to dance in your kirtan. Others will not see it, but you will see me. Please take this Mahaprasad, foodstuff and cloth of Lord Jagannath, and bring it to my mother, Sachi Devi. And please, when you bring these gifts of mine to my mother, Sachi, offer her my repeated obeisances and beg her forgiveness for the offense that I have committed to her. Service to my mother
and my mother's love for me is so dear. It is my duty to serve my mother. Such a great devotee she is. Actually, I never should have accepted the renounced order of life and left the service of my mother. By doing so, I have destroyed all of my religious principles. My love, my mother's love for me is so great that I am always subordinate to that love. And it is my duty to reciprocate and serve her. But I left. I took sannyas like a madman. What I have done was a crazy thing. It should have never been. But yet my mother, she is so gracious. Her love is so deep that even though I behaved in such an offensive, mad, crazy way, sometimes my mother cooks for me. She cooks just the things I like. And when she has them on the plate, she begins to cry. Let me tell you one instance. Mother Sachi prepared just the types of prasad that she knows I like so much. She made spinach, sak, of various varieties. And she made a curry out of banana flowers. And she made a very, very wonderful preparation with the nimba leaves. So many nice vegetables. And she put them on the plate and held the plate on her lap. And she was thinking, these are just the foods that Nimai loves. Where is Nimai? He is not here to eat it. She began to cry, tears from her beautiful eyes. She put that food and offered it to her deity of Bal Gopal. Lord Chaitanya said, while she was crying, I personally appeared there immediately and I ate everything on that plate. And when she looked down at the plate, she saw there was nothing on it. So she became, in her heart of heart, internally she knew that I came and ate it. But externally, she could not accept it. She became very frustrated. She saw that there's no fruit on the plate that I offered to Gopal. Could the deity of Gopal have eaten it? Or perhaps an animal came in and ate it. Or maybe I forgot to put anything on the plate in the first place, and I offensively offered an empty plate to Gopal. Then she went back to the kitchen and she saw in the pots there was still the bhoga in the pots. So she called her servant Ishan and said, please clean up the place and I will make another offering. Which she had done. Lord Chaitanya told Srivas, tell my mother this story, that this particular pastime took place on Vijay Dasami, and give her confidence that it is true, that what she feels in her heart is real.
that her beloved Nimai does come whenever she cooks to eat whatever she offers. And I personally come to see her and to worship her. As Lord Chaitanya was speaking these words, glorifying the love of his mother, he began to cry. He became speechless. Those who take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can enter into the wonderful loving lila of reciprocation of love with the Lord. That is the purpose of this material creation. For those who have willingly left the service of the Lord, for those who are trying to make some crazy experiment to see if they could be happy without Krishna, this material world has been created. But the Lord descends in so many wonderful ways to call us back home, back to Godhead. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. This world is a place where there is danger at every step. However, padam padam tirtha pada prapana. Hare Krishna. This means in every step, Krishna's lotus feet are as good as all places of pilgrimage for those who take shelter of them. So these are our two choices. Whether we want to pursue padam padam yadvi padam natesha, the place where there is danger at every step, or whether we want to pursue padam padam tirtha pada prapana, the place where there is all shelter and bliss, the lotus feet of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare
Hare. Is there any questions? Yes.
In previous few slokas, the Sankhya Yoga system has been enumerated, in which the Jiva Tattva has been, sort of the material creation has been talked about. And you mentioned about the five gross elements and three subtle elements in a previous class. At the same time, in this class, you mentioned that most of the things are created from the false ego. And in one of the translations, it has been mentioned that false ego, the manifestation of the mind is from the false ego, with the interaction of the mode of goodness. So in as far as human intelligence is concerned, how is that manifested? And at what level does the intelligence get purified to come to a spiritual realization?
Hare Krishna. That is all in this book. You should study it very carefully. Any other questions?
In this translation also, Mother Ganga has been mentioned, and it is most sacred of all rivers. So, It's most sacred of all rivers. And in today's time and place where there is pollution and contamination, what is the property of the river which retains its purity, and how are we still benefited by it?
The Ganges originates in the lotus feet of Krishna. When the Ganges descends to this world, it is giving shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore, all of the great scriptures throughout tradition have honored and worshipped the Ganges as the mercy of the Lord. People have gone to take shelter of the holy river Ganges. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared just on the bank of the holy river Ganges. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how much he praised Ganga. One time when he was traveling with his devotees, he came close to the Ganga and he began in ecstatic love to praise her. He said, anyone who touches the breeze that is coming from the Ganga will be purified of their sins and gradually achieve love of Krishna. Anyone who bathes in the water or tastes the water or even sees the water of the Ganges will get Krishna's special favor. Lord Chaitanya, when he was in Puri, he would often say, I want to go to Bengal to see my mother Sachi and the holy river Ganges. Lord Chaitanya told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his brother, he said, the Lord has appeared in two forms in this age of Kali, as Lord Jagannath and as the holy river Ganges. So how much he worshipped Ganga Devi. And Lord Chaitanya appeared in the form of a devotee to teach us how we should be devotees. But unfortunately, due to terrible mismanagement of human virtue and religious principles, our modern civilization has so offensively dumped so much pollution into the holy river Ganges. Previously, people would go to the Ganga to offer flowers, to offer so many beautiful offerings of lamps and incense. But now, factories are offering chemical waste, and municipal management is pouring tons and tons of raw sewage as an offering to Mother Ganga. So what we have today is the River Ganges with all of the pollutions of Kali Yuga is dumped into her with no respect for her sanctity or her mercy, with no consciousness that it is none different than the lotus feet of Krishna. To put all these pollutions in the Ganges is like, I won't even say the comparison. It is none different than the lotus feet of the Lord. Would you do that to the lotus feet of the Lord? So we should understand that what they put in the Ganges may not be the Ganges. However, that original current that may be joined by so many other things, that is the holy river Ganges. And because that is there, still it is considered equally sacred and sanctified. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explains in one of his books, in a purport, that a person with faith in the power of the Ganges, even in its polluted state, will not hesitate to bathe in it. And even Prabhupada says, if someone is in the Ganga and stool comes floating by, he will push aside the stool and not hesitate to drink the water.
Hare Krishna.
So, when we see, I remember we had a yatra to Uttarkashi, way, way up in Himalayas, on the way to Gangotri. Uttarkashi is called sometimes the Valley of the Saints. It's high in the Himalayan mountains. And there are so many yogis live in the forests in various caves and perform tapasya and meditate. This has been since time immemorial. Great rishis go to the Uttarkashi area. It's actually a very nice area. The mountains there are filled with so many beautiful natural caves. And nice herbs and fruits grow to sustain your body. Now Uttarkashi is quite close to the source of the Ganges. Gangotri. And it's the first town. The valley expands into the forest, but there has been built a town there. And we decided to all sleep right on the bank of the Ganges. We put up a tent right at the Ganges. And to our right was the Ganges, and to our left was this huge, massive stream with flow of thick black sewage just pouring right into Mother Ganga. Probably tons of sewage a day. A river just flowing and flowing and flowing. And at that place, the Ganges is still quite thin. And it's crystal clear and pure. And then you come to that place where this black, unfragrant refuge is just pouring into her. And that's in the peaks of the Himalayas. Probably 100 kilometers before the Ganges even comes to Rishikesh or Haridwar. So this is what our civilization is doing. From the spiritual point of view, it is quite offensive to be allowing such pollution to be put right in the most sacred, merciful stream of the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord. And from the ecological point of view, it's insane. Because a major portion of the population of India is nourished by these rivers. The crops are so much nourished by the water of these rivers. And what you eat when you eat food is what the water of the rivers is nourishing the crops to be. And people are getting their water supply from the rivers, and they're bathing from the rivers. It's the very basis of the life of this land of India, is the water of the rivers. Ecologically, spiritually, socially, it is so offensive. It's very sad. But still, no matter what people do to it, the same sanctified mercy of Ganga is still there. You can put so much on it and in it, but still the power of the lotus feet of Krishna is still fully manifested in the river Ganges. And therefore, we should be very eager to take our baths and worship Mother Ganga. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Any other question? Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.